Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
As you get ready to expand your knowledge this offseason, make sure to save the date for USA Football's 2020 National Conference taking place February 21st through the 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. This is more than just a clinic. It's your chance to hone your ability to teach proven and effective techniques while connecting with coaches across the country. Most coaches are satisfied if their regional clinic delivers just one or two nuggets of information. National Conference delivers a one-of-a-kind, high school-focused, live field experience that will give you an abundance of drills and techniques to improve your team's performance. Coaches can deep dive into both X's and O's and technique at classroom and chalk talk sessions. Finally, USA Football delivers top keynote speakers year after year. Here's a few of the keynotes from previous years: Mike Tomlin, John Gruden, PJ Fleck, and Jeremy Pruitt. As an added bonus this year, paying attendees can get access to the advanced tackling system and contact system for blocking and defeating blocks following the event, and have a chance to earn the new advanced contact certification. If you're ready to get to work on next season, don't miss out on USA Football's National Conference. Learn more at nationalconference.usafootball.com/podcast. Enter the code PODCAST179 to save at registration. Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. We are recording live at the New York State High School Football Coaches Association Clinic. And they've done an excellent job here, I could say. Great lineup, met a lot of great coaches here. And I'm excited to be joined by the new head coach at Buffalo State, Christian Oslins. Coach, it's great to be talking ball with you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Coach, you have been a longtime assistant, and we're going to talk about that topic today. Before we get into some of those things, you know, the keys to being a great assistant coach, I think is a very important topic. Tell us a little bit about your coaching journey that has brought you to the point where you're the head coach now at Buffalo State.
I've total 26 years in college coaching. Been at Hamilton College, Methodist College, Alfred University, Maryville College, and then Buffalo State for 16 years. And like I said, was able to, after the 2018 season, was bumped up into the head coaching job as Jerry Boyce stepped down as longtime head coach there. So
Coach, you have learned along the way. What makes a great assistant coach, having a number of stops there, and you put that together for us, some keys that you feel are important to the assistant coach? And, you know, for a lot of our coaches out there, they do aspire to be head coaches someday or maybe coordinators. But, you know, in talking to, and it was an episode that aired today, Tom McDaniels from Ohio, who was a great high school football coach there, 40 years retired. You know, he talked about the importance of being great at the job you have right now, which for a lot of us is being great as an assistant coach. So what do you see as the keys to being a successful assistant coach?
Well, part of the first thing is persevering to what you're in your mind. I had a goal when I first got into college, okay, was going to be 5 years, get a full-time job. And after 5 years, get a coordinator's job. After five, then become a head coach. Well, that didn't work out the way it was my plan right. was. So you have to persevere, and you have to know that this is what you want to do, and you have to go through the ups and downs. As we talked earlier, I survived three head coaches at Buffalo State during my 16 years to be named the head coach. So I think I got a lot of things I can share with people because of that experience. But I think the number one thing as any kind of assistant coach is loyalty. The thing I was taught way, way back in the beginning with Jim Moretti at Alfred when I was a GA for him was loyalty was the number one thing he looked for. And I think that's the key as an assistant coach. And you hit it on the head. The other part is making sure that job you're at right now is the most important thing that you do. I've seen too many coaches, young coaches, that don't do a great job of where they're at because they're worrying about where they're going to be in the next job.
Guys getting lost in football school.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And that's the worst thing. I was told this a long time ago by Steve Frank, who was the head coach at Hamilton. Your job as an assistant coach is to make sure that head coach looks good. And it's simple as that. You're not going to get the fame, you're not going to get the glory, but you're also not the guy who gets fired, okay, right. when it all comes down to it. So, you know, I think I've been fortunate. The guys I've worked for have all, given me so much in this game, and I think that's a, like I said, something I love to share to people with people. So
absolutely, yeah. The loyalty part is important. It's maybe sometimes gets glossed over now. I mean, you know, a lot of guys like to go out there and try to raise their profile, whether it's on social media or out networking. And sometimes you got to watch what you say. You know, it's great to have ideas and want to share your ideas, but you're at a place doing a job that, you know, you're responsible to do well and do it a certain way. You signed up for that job, and if it's not right for you, then it's time to move on. Don't sit in it, because that's not good for anybody.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What's the next point you have?
The next, you know, I think one of the other points, big points, I think, is that I talked about, you know, taking care of the business of where you're at, and no job's too small. Sometimes as an assistant coach, one thing I've prided myself in is I did all the little things. So now as a head coach, there isn't anything that I will ask one of our assistants to do that I haven't done, whether it's laundry, whether it's line of field, okay, do it, you know, pick up cones or everything else. And I think that sometimes guys are looking to, well, I want to be the coordinator. I want to be the guy telling people way too soon instead of learning the kind of an internship, say, of the job. But it still goes back to making sure your job is to make sure that head coach feels comfortable with what you're doing. And I think that is a big part of it. The other part that I think is is your reflection of your kids. I learned this, Phil Wilkes at Maryville. Your players are a reflection of you. So if your kids are making mistakes, your kids aren't acting right, there's one person to look at. And that's, yeah. And sometimes, unfortunately, we're in a time where people want to blame the kids and say, well, the kids are different kids, but they're still a direct reflection of what you're giving out and what you're doing. And I think we got to really make sure as coaches look back and look in the mirror and say, hey, am I doing all the right things, or are they picking up on the negatives that I'm giving out sometimes? So
yeah, in reflecting on that, and especially when you're looking at, you know, the play, watching film, what are my guys doing right or wrong? We get, as coaches, I think, make the mistake of, you know, pointing the finger. Well, I told him to do that. I coached him to do that. And believe me, I've done it before, right? You probably sat in film and done the same thing, but you do have to stop and reflect and say, why isn't he getting it, or is he not ready to do it? How do we have to continue development? It's not, you know, I think we have to sometimes separate that. It's not an indictment of our coaching necessarily. It's just that we have more work to do, and I think that's probably the best approach in how to look at it, is rather than seeing it as I'm failing, is I have to learn to, in order to find a way to help, what I'm doing right now isn't helping this kid, or he doesn't see it yet, and reflect on that and figure out, how do we fix this? How do we get better?
No, absolutely. And young coaches, there are three parts in the game of football is coaching. It, you know, it's recruiting, on-field coaching, and off-field duties. As a head coach, you need to be great at all three in order to, I believe, to be successful. As a young coach, once again, you're probably good at one or two of those things. It's sometimes very tough to look at yourself and say, hey, what are my weaknesses and how can I get better at those? And I think that's, as you mentioned, some guys could look at it as they're a failure when kids aren't playing as well. But not every kid learns the same way.
Right.
And you've got to be able to teach different ways. And that's the creative mind of a coach, which I think is different than teaching. You know, coaching is teaching, but you get graded a whole lot different than a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I take the word coach so serious about as a profession. And I think it's just the best profession to be in right now.
Couldn't agree with you more. Coach, what else is going to make you a great assistant coach?
Well, being organized. I think one of the reasons I've stayed in the game this long is I'm organized to a point where sometimes I'm too organized. And that, but not, I mean, it's a game of football, there's always sudden change. Things are going to go wrong. But if you're organized, you can handle them in stride. And recruiting is another one. I think that is one of, if I could tell myself 26 years ago what I need to get better at would have been, and it took me a little while, was recruiting, because that can keep you in the game. In college, that keeps a lot of coaches in the game if you can recruit. And I think what's one of my strengths now after a couple of years, and that came from Coach Moretti at Ed Alford, really showed me what it took to be a college recruiter, building a relationship with the parents of the kids and not just facts and everything else about the school. And I thought that was from there, I became a great recruiter because of that, and I think that's part of the reason why I've been able to stay in 26 years in college. So, and not been fired, so it's good.
Recruiting definitely will keep you there, and it is about building that relationship. Certainly, you want to be as knowledgeable as anybody about your product, right? Your school, but they're not always ready to hear all those things first. There's so many people coming at them, throwing things at them. They got to figure out, who do I really trust here? Who can I trust the most? Who would I want to go play for?
Absolutely. And I got a taste of it this year. My son was a senior, so he was being recruited by some FCSs and Division IIs. So I got to see it from the other side. And to see him, how he interacted with coaches and of the coach, well, they want to sit down and give them the 25 facts of their college instead of the other coach that came in and just talked to them, mm-hmm. and just built that relationship and see, okay, this is the kid my son opened up to more because you talk to him as a person and not just all the facts of your college. And that's huge because we're dealing with more kids now that are single parents, no parents. And sometimes you're the closest thing to a parent to them. And they got to be able to trust you, and you hit it on that. They're going to open up, and they're going to go to a school that they feel they really can trust that coach more so than you've got. Okay, you got the best criminal justice program in the state or anything like that. They're going to go where they feel most comfortable. So
yeah, I think, you know, for a lot of guys, you want to become a good recruiter. Go be in the Division III game for a couple reasons. Number one, you're not buying, you're selling.
Yes, absolutely.
But number two, there is a volume to it. So if you want to get good at something, you do it again and again and again. And I can remember my first year coming from high school, going to college and recruiting, and it was, man, in that first week, you know, hundreds of phone calls.
Yes.
And talking and you know, being able to, you know, cold call, essentially, telemarket essentially, yes. But not feel that way, like starting to develop that relationship. What is it about this kid? What can I write in my notes beyond what I already have on this kid that when I come back and talk to him again, you know, in the second round of talking to hundreds of these guys, that we can make that connection?
Yeah, and that's where the organization part of it. I think that, you know, being organized so you know exactly, okay, I've got 45 calls I'm going to make tonight, and making sure you've got them all listed, who you're going to call. And as you said, making sure you have notes, okay? So if I just talked to Joe Smith and I talked to him about his basketball game last week, well, I don't want to sound like I don't remember what goes on. So organization, I think, is a huge part, not only in recruiting but in everything you do. I read a great article a couple weeks ago about how you plan your day just like, you know, any other business, and you mark it right down the night before. And I've learned that since I took over as the head coach, every night before I leave the office, I write down on a piece of paper everything that I'm going to be doing the next day. So I am organized with it, and there things don't pop up on me. So that way. The other one, you know, I think, and it sounds weird, but I see it a lot now, and I got down there as one of my notes, is dressing like you want to be a head football coach. And I know we're a little more relaxed nowadays, you know. Right. But I do remember when I was a GA, made $125 a month at Elford, but you would have thought I made $100,000 the way I dressed. And it was just the way Coach Moretti wanted, as a GA, he wanted you dressed well, because you never knew who was going to come into the office, what recruit may pop in, president comes down. And to this day, I still make sure I never wear sweats. And, you know, unless we're doing something, we have to move stuff, I'm a shirt and tie guy every day. And I think it's a big part of it, yeah. You know, because you're in higher education. And I think when you're in higher education, you need to dress like you want to be in higher education.
Yeah, I agree. We were shirt and tie, you know, could wear a coat if we wanted for all recruiting days, and basically, you know, khakis, and mm-hmm. could wear a coach's shirt or button down on any other day, including during the season in the office. And then when it was time to go out to practice, then we could dress.
Yes.
Like coach practices in the weight room, we dress like, yeah, coaches. But I questioned it. You know, I saw other maybe teams in the building, other athletic teams in our department, not really having that same kind of thing. And you know, just looking at it first, trying to figure out, well, you know, they're this way, why? But you did feel, I guess, different about that and just the way you carried yourself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I agree with that one. It's not always easy, you know, but I think, again, having setting up parameters, our coach did a good job in saying, here's our dress code for when. And Summer had a different dress code when no one was around. And, you know, so, you know, establishing those things.
No.
And I think, you know, as you become a head coach, don't expect everybody to know what you want. I mean, put those things on paper, share it with everybody, and give them the expectation.
And that's, as I said, I've been fortunate. I've worked for some excellent head coaches that did that. There was no wondering what was going on. Everything was detailed. You knew what your expectations were from day one on, and everything else. And I think as an assistant coach, once you know those, your job is to make sure you adhere to those and you do those. And you know, one of the other notes I had down there was, what I always pride myself in is, well, head coach never had to ask me, okay, if a job was done. It got done. I knew what my jobs were, and as an assistant coach, that's huge. So yeah. When that head coach has to question or ask again, well, if a job is done, well, you know what? I could have done it myself, or he could have done it himself, or I can find someone that will get it done. And that is one of the other pieces that, when as a head coach, you can sit back and go, all right, well, I don't have to worry about this as being done, because I know Coach Smith is, everything I've ever has done has gotten finished, or I know is in the process of being finished. And so I think that's always a big key, kind of being, always wanting to be that right-hand man to the head coach. That was always my goal. Make yourself where you're inexpensible.
That is how you get promoted.
Exactly.
Right?
Get promoted, and that's how you stay on staff.
Yeah.
And bottom line, as I said, I've survived three other, because I believe I was. I was that coach that, you know what, I may not be the brightest guy, may not be the best X and O, but I'm a guy that you just can't get rid of because I bring too much to the table. So.
Exactly.
The other one, I know it's kind of funny that I always bring up, and I learned this as my wife for 20 years now, is the keeping the work stuff at work and not bringing it home to the office. And I say that as an assistant, sometimes there's things that happen and you come home and you want to tell the stories to your girlfriend, your wife and all that, and they talk too. And then I think sometimes what happens in the locker room and coach's locker room, office, everything needs to stay in there. And even though it is your significant other, I've seen too many staff that sometimes it becomes, because women will gossip and I think so. That would, if I could tell myself as well, that would be something to make sure you keep, you know, your football stuff stays at home, and especially what the head coach has, because sometimes he is given information that should just stay right there in the office, and sometimes I can come back and bite you on the tail. So that way, like I said, the recruiting part, dressing well, you know, are some of the biggest. The loyalty is still the biggest.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says. We are in a, as you mentioned, we're in a job market that people are worried about where the next job is instead of taking care of the job they're at, and you know, not staying with a coach if things aren't going well, so they're going to jump ship on you instead of saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to fight through this with you and have your back. I think that's kind of, it's starting to be a lost part in the college coaching, at least.
Yeah, you know, looking at it now, you've done everything, obviously, to get yourself to this position to be a head coach. You've done it by, you know, everything you said here, as you mentioned, you've given us examples of. So now looking at, you know, your coaching staff, especially the young guys, is there anything right now that's really changed from when you first started that they need to think about a little bit more?
Cell phones. you know, we have a rule. I've got some young coaches, got 20, some most of my staff's 28 and younger. I have one older coach on staff, but the rule that we have in our meetings now is, you know, is phones are, you don't have your phones on. Your phones are turned, put down, unless there's something going on. But we're too much. So when we're talking, and it doesn't matter whether you're involved with the conversation, you're still paying attention.
Yeah.
But we're still in, unfortunately, our kids are, and our young men are on the phone constantly. And they're missing out on conversations and things that sometimes they don't realize is valuable, that just because their thumbs are actively working or they're scrolling through Twitter to find something. So that's something that I've keep talking with our guys. And the other part is building the relationships on campus. I was told that a while ago when I first got started, I got put on committees, got put on different things around campus, that I was like, why am I on this? What's the purpose? But you never know what this person, faculty member, maintenance person, could help you out down the road because you're on a certain committee or you, you know, like our Ron's one of our maintenance guys in the morning, and the, you know, we treat him like gold, okay, every year. You know, coaches get gear, he always gets a little something because, you know what, you never know how he can help us. And we've had a couple incidents that he's been around where things have been didn't look good in the office, and next thing you know, he's cleaning them up. So building the relationships outside of your immediate coaches, I think is huge within your athletic department, maintenance office, and your faculty and staff.
Yeah, sure. You're part of that bigger team. And, you know, as a college, you got to pull together. And, you know, I can remember, you know, our coach did a really good job at BW promoting those kinds of things and making sure we were, you know, because we were going to work with admissions, mm-hmm. we knew those people.
Yes.
It wasn't just sending reports over. Like, I mean, we actually started, you know, when they opened up their new visit center, we started our visit day over there, right? And it was good. You know, we got to meet all those people, talk to everybody we were working with instead of just a name on your email, right? You got to put the face to the name and
Absolutely.
Develop a relationship. And then professors too, right? Especially, you know, you think about there's probably a lot of common majors for your players, ones that they gravitate towards. But you better know the people in those departments. Number one, to understand where your guys are academically, but also, you know, they could be a big aid in recruiting. You know, as you get that student athlete who's interested in a certain thing, and you have a professor who's willing to spend 5 or 10 minutes on the phone or visiting during, you know, an on-campus visit, those things can be huge to recruiting and getting those players in. So just all kinds of different aspects of it. I mean, it's really about, you know, just grow that family you have, right? Grow
yes.
grow that football family and try to be including more people because in one way or another they're a part of it.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, like I said, you never know who is going to be able to help you out with little things and something and all that. But and that's like everything else. You just continue to develop. And that's why, like this clinic right here, we brought three of our younger coaches down here just for the, we're here for the day only. But I wanted them from 9 o'clock to 9 o'clock get to as many different clinic things that they can meet different coaches. For us, this is a huge recruiting piece for us because we get to see yeah. high school coaches in New York State that sometimes we would not get to go to. So this has been a great thing, and like I said, the development, you know, can never stop learning in the game of football and in all aspects. And that's with this clinic talk, with they got different aspects, not just X's and O's. Just was over at Rich Robbins, over at Canisius.
Yeah.
Listening to him, my son went there, and my son was graduating from there. But he talks about the high school program and just all the little things that you don't really, sometimes as a coach, you forget about the mm-hmm. getting the retreats and stuff like that. So it's been good.
So as you move forward now as the head coach at Buffalo State, you know, looking at all the things you do and you're preparing to do now that the WLs are going to go under your name.
Yes.
what is it you think that you do as a coach that's going to give your players the winning edge?
Well, I think the biggest thing is our kids will know that I know I will care for them more than just wins and losses, the W's and the L's. They know they can, you know, once again, everybody on their team, once again, I don't know if it's a unique thing, but you know, everybody has my cell phone number. Everybody knows that they can contact me at any time to a certain extent, okay? but, you know, the kids understand that no, it doesn't matter what's going on. We have, you know, I got a thing up on my door saying, you know, if it's closed and there's a sign on there, and the only time it can be opened up, knocked on, is if it's the athletic director or one of our players. Other than that, I don't want to, I'm in a meeting or I'm doing something, but our players and our athletic director are the only two that are allowed to interrupt anything. And I want those guys to understand how important it is that, you know what, I don't care what's going on, you need me, you can come in. And mm-hmm. I think that is the they'll do everything they can for you if they know you'll do everything for them. And,
absolutely.
You know, and I don't care. X's and O's are important, but the Jimmys and Joes. And the recruiting part is huge, too. It's a huge, huge part of it. So,
well, Coach, best of luck as you get things going here. And good luck in 2020. And thank you for taking some time.
No, thank you.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.